Forgotten Flicks, Episode 5, Babysitting, the World's Most Dangerous Job? Hey, everybody, and welcome to Forgotten Flicks. I'm Joel, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Jason.
Hey, Joel, how you doing?
I'm all right, man. So tonight we are going to discuss two, obviously, babysitting-related movies, one of which is Adventures in Babysitting from 1987, and the other is Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter is Dead from 1991. So let's go ahead and get started.
Meet Chris Parker. Getting ready for the greatest night of her life.
Hi.
I gotta cancel.
Now she's stuck babysitting the Anderson kids. Sarah.
Mom got Chris to babysit for me.
Chris?
Her brother Brad.
Oh my.
His best friend Daryl.
Who is this kid?
Stray dog.
Take good care of my baby. I'll guard her with my life.
What could possibly go wrong?
Chris, I'm in trouble.
Hang up and sit down. I'll be there in half an hour.
Okay, so Adventures in Babysitting, and if you're new to the podcast, by the way, just so you know, when we talk about these first couple films, they are spoiler-loaded, so we're just going to let that out there now if this is your first time listening. If you haven't
although
seen...
Although I got to say, for most of the movies we talk about, not a whole lot of surprises come through.
Yes, exactly.
Pretty predictable in general.
Yeah, they are. Well, not only are they predictable in general, but I also would sort of assume a lot of the people that are listening to this show have seen them. So they may not have seen them in 20 years, but they've seen them. So I don't know that we're necessarily ruining anything. When we do our final six movies, we try to keep those spoiler light. You know, we're going to try and work on that. But we just want to give you the heads up. So anyway, Adventures in Babysitting is about a young lady, and we're going to get into how young she actually seems. Chris Parker, played by Elizabeth Shue. Mm-hmm. And she is a high school senior. And her boyfriend basically breaks a date off with her at the 11th hour. And she decides to go ahead and babysit some kids. Those kids, of course, are played by Keith Coogan. And I almost wanted to call this our Keith Coogan-centric episode because, you know.
Yeah, he's in both. Yeah, movies. He plays a babysat kid in both this and Don't Tell Mom Babysitter's Dead.
Indeed, he does. So. Two distinctly different characters.
Yep.
And then the other one is, of course, little Sarah. She's the Thor lover. And that was Maya Brewster. Is that right?
Bruton.
Sorry, Maya Bruton. Uh-huh. And she, so those are the kids she has to babysit. And then, of course, Brad, that's Keith Coogan's character, his friend Daryl shows up, and Daryl's sort of the snarky, sarcastic
pervert best friend.
You always have to have the pervert. He's sort of like his Skippy, if you remember Family Ties, Skippy, except yeah. Skippy wasn't nearly as big a pervert.
No.
So that she ends up going and babysitting them for the evening, and of course they don't stay home because her friend Brenda, I do believe it is, played by Penelope Ann Miller, ends up running away from home, calling her to tell her, oh, please come get me. I'm at the bus station. There's a guy here who's going to shoot me, et cetera, et cetera. And Chris can't leave her best friend there. So she goes, and let's just say all manner of wackiness ensues.
Adventure and debauchery follow.
Yeah. Or as I wanted to call it at one point, contrivances in babysitting. Because, oh, dear Lord. Now, I will tell you this, though. While that's sort of our quick little synopsis. And again, mm-hmm. I don't think, everybody's probably seen it that's listening to this for the most part. And it struck me about 30 minutes into the movie how unbelievably, not just really predictable, because one would argue the predictability factor would be contingent on them doing things that kind of flowed out in some kind of order. But it seemed like everything happened so suddenly. So, like, tire blows out. Okay, I can accept that. That gets the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are in a truck with a guy who's a complete psychopath who's going after his wife and her lover.
Okay. Has a hook for a hand and a gun in his glove box.
Wait, no. But it's important. Doesn't just have a hook for a hand. He has a hook for a hand after, on the way, while they were on their drive, Chris got done telling them a story about the so urban legend about the guy with the hook for a hand.
Yeah, yeah. The cool. Face scraper story. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It was so filled with those kinds of things. And honestly, I at first when I finished this film, I was sad. I was just it made me sad. And it made me sad because not because the movie is depressing by any stretch. And, of course, it just occurred to me we completely glossed over the whole, so you've seen any good movies lately, which we kind of wanted to touch, but that's okay. We're cool. We'll, maybe we'll address. Maybe
we can go back to it.
Yeah, we can always go back to it. That's right. Let's roll with it, brother. So, it occurred to me that, what did you call it? What did you want to call the, syndrome?
Well, at first I thought, well, it's kind of like juvenile cinema syndrome, but I think it's more of exaggerated nostalgia.
Yeah.
Disorder, something like that, yeah. Because it's the idea that you see a movie as a kid and years later as a grown up, you think, God, I love that movie. And especially like in context, when you and I start to bring up titles to talk about here, we'd say, oh, I saw that movie when I was a kid. Oh, I loved it. Oh, we got to watch it again so we can talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
And you watch it and you're like, what was that?
Yeah.
I like that. Oh yeah. My God. It was terrible. So, I mean, it's one of those that your memories of it, far exaggerate how good it actually was. And usually it's, you know, contextually as a kid, you know, you see things differently and I guess you forgive things a lot better, especially given the fact that, you know, at this point you and I have seen literally thousands and thousands of movies. And, as a kid, you know, you've seen, you know, dozens. And so when you see movies like this, you're like, oh, that's awesome. And then now we've seen so many. You watch some of the things like the one of the things that stood out to me in this movie that just ate me up. The tow truck picks up the car, right? They're all driving. Mm-hmm. He swerves, goes to the wife's house, and the kids and the babysitter, Elizabeth Shue, they escape. Well, at some point, the tow truck driver comes back, meets them up again, and says, hey, I took your car to the shop, and he'll take care of you. You just got to go get to the shop. So all of this entire movie, if you haven't seen it, takes place between the hours of, I'd say, 6 o'clock in the evening? It's still daylight out. And the parents said they're coming home by 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they break down, and it's in Chicago, by the time they break down on some freeway in the middle of downtown Chicago, mm-hmm. the tow truck picks them up, it's dark. So I have to assume that even in, you know, the dead of winter, which it wasn't, it's got to be maybe 7. When they get to that mechanic shop, the car has the windshield replaced and the tire replaced, mm-hmm. and it's sitting there waiting for them. What mechanic have you ever heard of?
I'll tell you who.
All that stuff done in the matter of 2 hours?
I'll tell you who.
Oh my God. Four.
Gomer Pyle from Full Metal Jacket by way of Thor. That is who.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yes, we'll get into that. Absolutely. We'll get into that. We have to hold that one. We can't. Don't let that one out of the bag yet.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and proceed. Before. Those of you that this is still one of your favorite films, and right now you're like, those sons of bitches that are just really, really pissed at us right now, please understand something. We don't hate the movie. We may sound like we're being a little of it, but we don't hate the movie. I just, like I said, for me, it struck me as sad that I loved it as a kid so much, and now I'm watching it again. And I mean, certainly, it was so funny because this also happened with Don't Tell Mom that I don't watch. You know, Don't Tell Mom nearly as much as I'm sure I watched Adventures of Babysitting. Plus, I had, you know, a sister and two girl cousins that we always hung out together. So this movie was on all the time. And so there's just certain lines and certain moments. And I think that's something that's interesting that happens when you haven't seen a movie in, you know, 15, 20 plus years. And you saw it so many times, these scenes just hit you. And it's like you're right back where you were. It's just like you saw them a week ago. And I found that interesting. But again, I found it sad because, like you said, we've now seen so many films and we're jaded. We're a little cynical. Mm-hmm. And we know, you know, having written screenplays and done, you know, some of that kind of stuff, I know how the process is and I know the story flow. And I felt all the beats and the contrivances, and it made me cringe, and it's like, wait a minute, that didn't happen when I was a kid, and it bothered me. But let me just add this. One thing I figured out a way to enjoy the movie. This is important.
Okay.
As a few days went by after watching it, and I kept coming back to, I've got to find something positive to say. This is going to suck. It occurred to me that if you watch it in the context, And this makes sense when you figure this is Chris Columbus is the director of it. And it was his first film as a director. He had written Gremlins prior to that. Mm-hmm. I want to say he wrote Goonies, but I could be wrong on that. Don't hold me to that because I don't know that he did. But I know he wrote Gremlins. He obviously went on to direct the first two Harry Potter films. He directed Home Alone. And, you know, his aesthetic, his style is obviously sort of this fantasy world meets the real world. And, you know, you can, especially in Adventures of Babysitting, it definitely had a John Hughes sort of influence, which is fitting since John Hughes wrote Home Alone. And it had that vibe to it. So if you take it as a fairy tale, like if you go into it expecting it to be even remote, not just realistic in the way it's acted and the characters portrayed, because I felt like that worked. I mean, everybody in it was really good. I mean, there was nobody that jumped out at me. It's like, oh my God, they're awful. It was just more the story itself of just how all the episodes play out. I just felt several occasions myself cringe with a rolling of the eyes like, oh, gee. So now you happen to conveniently be exactly within eyeshot of the building her parents are in all of Chicago. Yeah. Oh, and gee, you happen to get to that building in about 2 minutes. I mean, you know, there's that kind of stuff. And
let me say, just to add to what you said, that we don't hate this movie. I certainly didn't hate it. I think for me, it was more the gap between how much I liked it as a kid and how much I liked it now. And more so, and I don't think, maybe it's not so much for this one. It wasn't so much how many movies we've seen. For me, it wasn't. It was more about, I guess now, I'm as a kid, suspension of reality is easy. You do it all the time. You know, you have comic books, video games, movies, you know, you live in a fantasy world a lot of times as a kid. As an adult, you're thinking much more about the practicality. And it's the things like how long it took them to get places. Like I said, how long it took the mechanic at night to fix their car.
It's like 24.
They get in the car with a carjacker.
Yeah.
And the carjacker's like, I'm going to help you guys out. Sure. Right. I mean.
Really. And it's sort of like it ran on the same time principle as the TV show 24, if anybody watched that, where – you know, Jack Bauer, well, of course, they always be there. Well, he never goes to the bathroom in a 24-hour period. Well, first off, folks, he's Jack Bauer. He doesn't have a bladder.
He's been trained to hold it for 48 hours.
He had a colostomy bag, you know, surgically inserted into his abdomen. He doesn't
CIA need depends. Yeah,
that's right. But, you know, it did have that same sort of idea that, you know, Jack Bauer is going around L.A. and he's able to get to all these places within an hour's time. And, yeah, I don't think so, because anybody that knows LA traffic, I don't think so. So, but, and again, that's being nitpicky, although I do want to address a few things that were just sort of moments. And first and foremost, when Brad, Mr. Keith Coogan, who, by the way, was in a couple of other great movies. I just want to add these in. With John Cryer, he was in the movie Hiding Out, which I don't know if you've seen that one.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. And again, I really hope it holds up because I loved that movie where John Cryer plays this Wall Street broker, and he ends up having to hide out in a high school, pretending to be a high school student because the mob is after him to kill him. And Keith Coogan's character plays his cousin, and he's actually pretty funny in that. And there was another movie he was in called Toy Soldiers.
Oh, love that movie.
Yes, I do. And again, another one I haven't seen in a long time that we're going to have to cover at some point. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, if it doesn't hold up, I'm going to be so pissed because I saw that movie about a year ago. Did you?
And it was still really good.
Was it really? Okay. Because it's Sean Austin. Is it Will Wheaton in that?
Yes, Will Wheaton is in it. He's the one who, and not to go off on a tangent, but Will Wheaton's dad's the gangster.
That's right.
That takes over the school. Sean Astin is in it, and that's a good one. I really like that.
And Sean Astin is the main character.
It did hold up, so.
Yeah. Is Sean Astin the main character in that?
Yeah, he's the like bad boy at the, you know, at the military academy who's kind of the cut up, and
he's the Ferris Bueller
in it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, we'll have to catch up to that one. But so Keith Coogan's definitely been in some really cool movies that, you know, I think all of us have some kind of connection to from our youth. So, but when he turned around the first time, dude, the first thing that came into my mind was, holy crap, he's the mom from Uncle Buck. And that joke is probably going to fall flat for most people, except go back and watch Uncle Buck and check out her hairstyle and then go back and watch when he turns around in that big red puffy 80s sweater. And I was like, oh, And I'd watched Uncle Buck not that long ago, which, by the way, for me, it really did hold up because I love me some John Candy. So, but yeah, that struck me that he just looked, had it was an odd look. But again, it was the 80s. So, you know, we'll go with it.
But, you know, one of the things that I noticed right away, I don't know if you caught this, but if you paid attention in the very, very beginning of Adventures of Babysitting, when Keith Coogan turns around, same scene when he's got the mom here, he's cooking and he's watching a cooking show on TV. And if you and as we'll talk about in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, he becomes kind of this chef, you know, couture, and he decides to start cooking as a vocation. That's what he finds out that he loves doing. In this one, I thought it was funny because I actually watched Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead first, which in, you know, temporarily actually came later.
Yeah.
But I watched that first and then this, and I caught that right at the beginning. He was watching a cooking show and cooking in the kitchen. Now, it turns out he was just cooking macaroni and cheese, and he dumps the macaroni all over the place. But at the same time, I just thought that was kind of a neat little tie-in.
Is that what he dumped? Both. I thought he dumped popcorn all over the place.
No, it looked like macaroni noodles because he was cooking, and when it was a strainer, and he was dumping him into the strainer.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Someone said, Chris is here, and he had the hots for her, and he dumped it all over the floor.
Yeah,
so
that's right. That's really funny because it's almost like Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, the guys behind Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow had a connection to this movie and Don't Tell Mom, and it was like they were giving us foreshadowing details. Yeah. Hands, clues. I'm just kidding.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, that whole thing with like his hair just kind of threw me for a second there. Kind of gave me that. I was like, and however, probably, and this is something Jason and I talked about when, you know, before we recorded the show. Actually, we talked about it several days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I let me say this. Let me add this caveat at the beginning. Elizabeth Shue is a beautiful woman. She is a sexy woman.
Hmm.
I will say, however, 17? Really?
No.
And the only one that would have been, that was worse as far as casting based on age, was her boyfriend, played by Bradley Whitford, I believe is his name. He's supposed to be a couple years older than her.
Yeah, he looked like 30.
Really?
Yeah, especially and most especially when at some point during their evening of, you know, running around, they see his Camaro parked at this fancy restaurant and, you know, his license plate says so cool.
Yeah.
And she goes inside to confront him and he's in a suit and a tie with this new girl and who has got to have the worst 80s hair I've ever seen. But yeah, in that with the suit and tie, he looks like 30.
Yeah.
And I know he's probably, you know, I don't know how old he was in that movie. He's probably 22 in
I think we did the math.
He looked way, way older than high school. Like a guy that had flunked high school twice.
Well, I think he was actually, the actor was like pushing 27, 28 at the time.
Really?
Yeah, he was definitely older.
Yeah, it was really bad. So,
and she was about 23 or 24. I think she's actually Elizabeth Shue was about 24, and she's playing 17. Here's the thing: where I'm going with this, I'm not saying she looked old at all.
No,
I mean, I saw a picture of her recently. I think she's aged exceptionally well. In fact, looks younger now than she actually is. Whereas then, and I don't know if it's the hair, I don't know if it's the clothes, I don't know what it is. I also felt this way about her in Karate Kid. Like Ralph Macchio, even though I know he was also kind of like had this Webster thing going where he in fact was like 5 or 6 years older than his character, but he looked really young.
Yeah.
And I bought that though. Her, I always felt, even with Karate Kid, she just has this maturity about her. I don't, you know, when I saw her and Bradley Whitford together standing outside of the house, it looked like, you know, they should be playing the mom and the dad. Like, I didn't buy them. Now, if they had made her a college student, even a young one, like, oh, she's a sophomore in college, I think I would have bought that. And it would have tied into the whole, oh, she's too old to be babysitting and all that kind of thing. Maybe she could still be living at home, going to, like, the, you know, the community college or something. So,
well, and you know the part, you know the scene where they stop at the fraternity house and, you know, she meets up with her, you know, the guy that in the end, spoiler alert, the guy in the end she ends kind of hooking up with.
Exactly,
George... What's his name? The guy that ends up, the college guy. What's his, the actor's name?
Well, I think it was George. Yeah, he was new.
George something. Newburn, maybe? Is that it?
Yeah, that might. I've seen him in some other stuff that honestly at the moment I can't even recall. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, he's the college guy that kind of saves them while they're in the frat party. It all felt believable because he looked like more of the older college guy and he was hitting on her and they were kind of hitting it off and it all seemed to work until – and because like you said, she looks more mature. She definitely doesn't look high school age until she says, I'm a senior in high school. Then it all got really creepy really fast.
Yeah, yeah. And then he shows up at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, he shows up at the end at the house. Oh, and then, okay, again. Well, you know what? Screw that spoiler alert stuff. We've already given him that. So yeah. The reality of the situation is at the very end of the freaking movie, the girl, Sarah, lost her skate. And he, of course, it was left, of course, in his car. And she shows up at the very end, right when Chris is leaving. You know, that kind of stuff. And again.
He shows up at her house. This had to be now because 1 o'clock is when the parents came home.
Yeah.
So this had to be. And it made it sound like it was like, you know, half an hour after they came home. He shows up at her house at 3 o'clock in the morning to return a skate, knowing she's a high school senior because he told her. She told him so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah. So. It was a little creepy.
But anyway, can I say one last thing about Elizabeth Shue in this?
Sure,
first of all, the whole opening scene when she's dancing in that kind of flash dance, long sweater thing to that doo-wop, He Kissed Me, and she's dancing around her. Yeah, that was, for me, that was definitely a puberty moment, I got to say. So
back in the day.
She's still very hot in that. I still think, and like you said, I've looked at pictures of her now. She's still very gorgeous.
Now, wait a minute. Yeah, wait, Jason.
I got to remember that probably more than anything in the whole movie. That's what I remembered most.
You said you've looked at pictures of her. Now, do you want to continue along that? You know, you want
to on IMDb. I looked at pictures of her contemporarily. Oh. Although that's another thing to bring that up. That was a weird storyline.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that they kept showing this Playboy centerfold that looked like her.
Yes.
I mean, with her being a high school kid and them playing that storyline, it felt weird. I mean, I assume that was probably really her that they shot headshots of, or, you know,
like
they
said, she was 24 at the time, so it wouldn't have been that big a deal.
But I mean, the way that they when they showed real headshots of the person in this Playboy that was supposed to, it looks like you, and she says, no, it's not me. I think they probably did photograph. I don't know. The story,
you know what's strange?
It looked like
my
really
memory.
Her.
My memory of that whole sequence, like when he's showing, when Daryl's showing Brad the Playboy in the back. I totally remembered that there was like boob shot in that, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
Was there?
Yes. There was actually several points in the storyline because, and for those of you who haven't seen it, at one point they kind of go into this gangster hideout and the gangsters have written notes for where they're going to be taking stolen cars,
which is conveniently,
on the centerfold of this Playboy,
which is conveniently the exact same Playboy that Daryl lost earlier.
Yeah, that just happens to be the same Playboy that Daryl was looking at and just happens to be the one that looks just like Chris, the babysitter, in the centerfold. So the creepy kid, Brad's friend.
Daryl, yeah.
What's his name? Daryl, right. He picks it up when they're in the gangster's hideout by themselves and kind of picks it up. So the gangsters chase them throughout the whole thing. Well, then that whole storyline of at several other points, they see a billboard of the Playboy pin up at least her head, and people approaching her about it. It just seemed weird.
It was this gag that they wanted to play throughout the whole film, and it's funny because, like, you look at, I guess, I mean, some PG-13s now can get away with some stuff, but it seemed, my recollection back in the day, that mid-8, like when PG-13 was still pretty new, they definitely got away with quite a bit more.
It was a little closer to R back then than it is now. But,
yeah, I think so.
I just thought that was awkward. But So anyway, the last thing I wanted to say before we get off this topic, I know I've said that twice now, is the cameo by one of my favorite television actors, at least, but also played in an awesome role, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Ah, yes.
I want to mention, because this is the same year, I think it's the same year, that Vincent D'Onofrio, who shows up as the mechanic in this movie and also looks just like Thor. And so Sarah, the little girl who's a Thor lover, her room is, you know, covered in Thor stuff, which one would think is really odd for a little girl. Even among comic book heroes, it's
really
a little weird.
She just wants to be different. She wants to be a contrarian. Oh, everybody else like Spider-Man, Hulk, Batman. Screw that. I'm going with some marginally obscure comic book character that nobody really is that into. Oh, of course,
and old, the movie coming out. So anyway, he shows up and he's got this long blonde hair and he happens to be holding a hammer while he's in a mechanic shop, and she thinks that he really is Thor. But that's the same year that he also played that crazy character in
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket. And he plays kind of that dumpy psychopath who ends up shooting
people
in that movie. But I will never, ever see him as anything else but Edgar, the cockroach guy from Men in Black. Can I have some sugar, please.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny because everything I see him in, he's always Pyle from Full Metal Jacket.
I love his playing that Edgar role in Men in Black was hilarious. And I'm also a big fan of his in the CSI Criminal Intent when he plays the detective. Yeah. And he always kind of leans down and talks sideways. My wife makes fun of him for that. But he's not a great actor.
He's a great actor.
But it was kind of funny seeing him in this because I had forgotten he was in this completely until I rewatched it and saw him kind of show up as Thor. But yeah, it was pretty awesome. So
I will say this though, I have to disagree with you that he looked just like Thor. That was the worst wig I've seen since the TV show Lost, which was notorious for their bad wigs. That was he took the hair off of a bunch of little girl Barbie dolls and like taped it to the inside of his trucker cap.
It looked like one of those gag hats that you can get that have the hair built into them.
Is exactly what it looked like, dude. It was awful.
It was rough.
And honestly, why him? Like, I mean, I kind of wonder what order he. I'm presuming he shot Full Metal Jacket before this because Kubrick is known for taking forever to shoot a film. So I'm guessing he shot that because he was obviously chunkier in that and out of shape.
Very thin as Thor in this.
That's my point. He did
much thinner than he did in Full Metal Jacket.
He was in good shape, but really Thor him?
Yeah, like, not so much. And you know what? Well, maybe we'll be able to revisit this when the new Thor movie comes out this year and we can compare to the guy that they cast in the new Thor movie, only Thor movie.
Yeah, but Chris Hemsworth, I think is his name.
Anyway, I think we're a little over time on Adventures.
I will say that, but I will also, real quick caveat with Thor, the movie that's about to come out. I still can't get over that it's directed by Kenneth Branagh. That's either going to make it completely and totally awesome or awful. Like, I don't think there's going to be any in between on that one.
It's not going to be a meh. No, it's going to be, as one of our listeners says, in later feedback that we listened to, this is going to be a divisive film, I think, that splits audiences probably. Yeah. Either they're going to be split completely or it's going to be all on the bad side.
In other words, if you love Shakespeare, this will be the Thor for you.
If you don't
love Shakespeare. Okay, so I guess on that note, we will now, we're actually going to do something a little different. Normally, we would save our feedback till at least after the first two movies, but we had someone leave us feedback. This is from Tawana. She's known on Twitter as Red K Queen. And she's been a very big supporter of the blog, and she's also becoming very big supporter of the website. I can't even talk.
The webcast.
The webcast. them webcast. The podcast. And she left us a really, really good, lengthy feedback about not only Adventures of Babysitting, but another film. And she had some other comments in regards to some ideas for future shows, which are great. And she said one thing in particular that it's funny. It had struck me as I was watching Adventures of Babysitting. So we're going to actually play her feedback now so we can address what she says. And then we'll go ahead and continue on with Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Hey, fellas. It's Tawana, also known as Red K Queen. I'm a really big fan of your podcast. It's been really fun listening to it. Congratulations on the podcast and all the recognition you're getting. You guys are doing a really good job. I just wanted to call in and give you a little bit of feedback. I've been having a little rewatch here. I heard you were going to be talking about Adventures in Babysitting. So I watched that, and I also watched The Night Before. That was a movie that Joel recommended that I see. And both of these movies, they have in common where the person of a Caucasian persuasion gets caught on the wrong side of the tracks. And then, you know, things work out for the best, I guess, at the end. So I guess no harm done, no major injuries. So everything's all right. Just wanted to give you, not that you are having trouble coming up with ideas for shows, but since you asked, I'd like to hear you guys talk about your feelings on, I don't want to say controversial movies, just movies that kind of split audiences. I would like to know what you think of Superman Returns, Me, Myself, and Irene. I didn't really know what to think of that one when I finished watching it. I didn't know if it was a good movie or a bad movie. I laughed at some points. I also would like to know how you feel the how I don't know. I feel like the horror genre is kind of moving towards this this horror porn, I like to call it. I don't really like that. I remember going to see The Strangers at the movies thinking, you know, going in with the expectation that it was going to be, well, I just didn't expect to go see that movie. I had no idea because it was Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman. And, you know, I knew him from Felicity. I just wanted to see a movie with Scott Speedman. And, you know, sitting down to that, I wanted to walk out the movie, but I did eventually get through it, but I wasn't really happy about it. So I just wanted to hear what you guys think about, you know, this movement. What do you think is a good idea? I don't know if maybe you can come up with a list of movies that, you know, horror movies for people who don't really like horror movies or something like that. But that's all I got for now. I just wanted to call in and tell you guys what a great job you're doing and keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, so that was Tawana and her feedback, which we really appreciate. And, you know, everybody, please, you know, leave your feedback. We will play it.
I got to say, though, Tawana, I don't know if I'll be able to talk about Superman Returns. And I don't know if that's very divisive because I have yet to hear anybody who liked it.
Honestly, when you said divisive, Jason and I listened to it and while we were, you know, on the horn here together, and we both did this simultaneously.
Oh, and, yeah, and, so sorry, if you're wondering what we think about Superman Returns, you got it right.
Yeah, there you go. Because, oh, dear God, was it awful.
And big pile of rotten tripe.
And I've got my reasons. Believe me, I can back it up. I'm not just saying it's awful to be, you know,
because everybody hates it. It's like everybody hates Phantom Menace.
No, I can at least come up with Phantom Menace. Darth Maul was awesome. And Duel of the Fates at the end was awesome. I have nothing for Superman Returns. But again, it's all an opinion.
No.
It's all an opinion.
No.
And I'm just hoping when they reboot it yet again for the umpteenth time that it's, you know, it meets the, even comes close to Superman 2. So,
yeah.
Anywho, I guess we'll go ahead and the main thing I wanted to address that she said was in regards to The Night Before, which the director of Night of the Comet, Tom Eberhardt, actually directed The Night Before. And I remember I actually really enjoyed that film. It was one of those movies I came across on video at the Movie Warehouse video store. And I saw, you know, Lori Loughlin was in it and, you know, this young Keanu Reeves. I was like, oh, that's cool. Check it out. And I really liked it. I mean, I have this part of me that has a really going back to your nostalgic disorder or whatever for movies that I realize in my gut in that part of me that's the film snobby guy knows there's no way. Why do you like these movies? But I can't help it. I'm sorry. Yeah. And I'm not using the GP expression. Screw that. I like them because
it's
I like
deep
them.
Fried cheese.
Yeah. But you know what? These weren't even cheesy, like in the way that the movies that you like are cheesy. They definitely have their problems. And I guess, you know what it is? They're kind of like, almost like feature length sitcoms, and I like some sitcoms, you know.
Yeah, it's light fare. It's not like the cheese that I like, but it is. It's not the
I guess it's cheesy. It's cheesy in the way a power ballad's cheesy, but I freaking love me some damn 80s power ballads. All right, I love them. I don't care who knows. Put on some Journey.
Ugh.
Okay. Did you say to Journey, dude?
Not to Journey, to power ballads. I'm always a second late on your jokes. Sorry.
Oh my god.
I'm a second late on everybody's jokes.
Is that delay kicking back in? All I heard was Journey and I was like, whoa, we're throwing down, boss.
No. I like Journey. I do like Journey. Right. But generally power ballads. Right. Don't give me Cinderella or Def
Leppard.
You hate
on Cinderella? What? What?
No. What? Never was a big fan.
Dude, Def Leppard?
I'm sorry.
Some of
the rock and stuff. I'm good. Power ballads, meh.
Love Bites, you didn't like.
Poison?
Dude, if you say Every Rose was not a good song. And to quote Paris, this podcast is over.
Okay, I won't say it. I promise.
All right, we'll let it slide. So the main thing I wanted to, you know, talk about with Night Before in Adventures of Babysitting, with the point that Tawana made, was when she said that she noticed both of those films have that common thread of, you know, I love how she says it, people of the Caucasian persuasion, which, by the way, if that domain is still available by the time we hang up on this podcast, I'm totally getting that, because that's kind of like what stuff white people like, the Caucasian persuasion. And it has all kinds of potential. So, so you know, but what I actually, it's funny she brings that up, because I noticed that. Like, as I was watching Visions of Babysitting, I'm like, huh, That's interesting. But let's just say it, a bunch of rich white kids, you know, and they go, it's, and especially if you take the fairy tale metaphor to the next level of, okay, they're going into the, you know, the dangerous forest, you know, a la Hansel and Gretel or something. It definitely had that vibe to it. And quite honestly, you have to consider the context of when a movie's made, for sure. I mean, obviously a lot of these 80s movies, there's lots of gay jokes. There's lots of racial jokes because political correctness was not as intense as it is today. And that's just, that's just the fact. But it was awkward. I found it to be like that, and then I haven't watched Night Before in a while, but I remembered in Night Before it was the same kind of vibe, and I think it's probably very indicative of that time period where, and I don't know if it's subconscious, I don't know if it was intentional, I don't know if it's unintentional, and we're just reading way too much into it, but it's almost as if there was this subtle, you know, fear of, you know, look at, you know, our kids, they're going into these quote unquote, I'm using quote fingers right now, you know, bad parts of town, wrong side of the tracks, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, there's definitely, you know, something more there. Like, I feel like it wasn't just, oh, it's innocent.
Yeah, but at the same time, I have to say, and the feedback was great, and it is a good point, and I agree with you, because I did notice in both of these, there were kind of gay joke, or not jokes, but gay comments made as if calling each other names and stuff, and it kind of came out a couple of times. But in general, for the racial tension in this, I did think, though, the most dangerous person in this whole thing was really the crazy white tow truck driver his sleazy wife and the guy that they chased after, or the tow truck driver chased after, and also.
Well, and I think that it is interesting to note that I can't remember the guy, the African American actor who plays not the one that carjacks him, but the other dude,
kind of the lieutenant.
I mean, he was obviously being played as a bad guy, but the guy who actually ends up sort of you know, helping him out and everything, you know, he was totally portrayed as this, you know, nice guy who doesn't want to be. In fact, again, I like everything else in that movie. It was sort of like one of those really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
The carjacker turned hero.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I'm fine with them, you know, making him a hero. I just felt like the way they went about it was like a, right. but the point being, I think it's a very good point that she brings up. And I think that, you know, again, considering, and we've talked about this when it comes to special effects and all sorts of things, when you consider a time that the movie is made, the mentality about certain things is completely different. And I don't necessarily know that it's wrong to portray it as, you know, these kids go to the side of town and they get in trouble. I think that it's interesting that it happens in several movies completely unrelated to each other throughout. It's obviously a common theme that is in some of these films. So I just thought that was a very interesting point she made, and I'm glad she made it, because actually I was thinking about it too. So
yeah, good call, definitely.
And in regards to the horror stuff and everything else, yeah, I think at some point we will address all that. I personally am not a fan at all of what, you know, the people like to call the torture porn, which I think is sort of, you know, for a lot of people is becoming almost like a cliche thing, but I mean, I don't know what else you call it. And as one who grew up on Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and Reanimator and all sorts of stuff, you know, it ain't my cup of tea. So
yeah, but that's for all. I mean, we can you and I could literally fill a podcast talking about
I
that.
I think
we
can. I'm sure we will. So at some point,
we will.
Yeah. Tawana, thank you very much for that. And we got one more piece of feedback. And why don't we go ahead and just play it now? Because it's actually referring back to our last show. And this is from Umar, also known as DeFixer.
Hey guys, this is Umar, otherwise known as that series of tubes called the Interweb as the Fixer. I just heard your show today. I loved it. I never saw Deep Star 6 or Leviathan. I didn't see Alligator. Love Creepshow 2. Couldn't stand Piranha. Orca, I was a kid when I saw that, but believe it or not, I enjoyed it. Got to watch it again to see if it still holds up. But I wanted to give you a couple of my favorite city or lab under the sea movies. Deep Blue Sea, which had the best death scene of all time. Deep Rising, I think that was with Treat Williams too, because, you know, Treat Williams, he's in all the really good movies. And I think that was the one where they went to the ship and was chased around by the monster. Those are two of my favorite crazy sea monster movies. I hope to hear more from you guys. Keep the shows coming. Love it. Peace.
And thanks for that, Umar. That was awesome. And I agree with you. Deep Rising actually came out, I believe, when I was still working at the movie theater way back in the day. And I actually remembered enjoying it. I thought it was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming when you talk about Deep Blue Sea and the greatest death scene, I'm assuming you mean when Sam Jackson bites it, when he's kind of going on and then the shark just kind of launches it. So I won't say anything else because spoiler alert. So, yeah, I appreciate you giving us your feedback and your thoughts on those other films that we talked about. It was very cool.
So would that one categorize as some good cheese then?
Which one?
Yeah. The Deep Blue Rising.
Heck, your Deep Rising and Deep Blue Sea. Oh yeah. Oh god. Yeah.
Deep Blue Sea. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they definitely would be. Yeah. I mean, they're fun, but they're definitely cheesy. So, okay, we will go ahead then. And without any more hesitation, we will get into Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
When's your mom leaving for Australia?
Oh, in about an hour and a half.
She's leaving you guys all alone.
I'm getting rid of her for 2 whole months. I can go to the beach. I can stay out as late as I want. I can do anything. I'm a free woman.
Hi. Hello to you. I'm Mrs. Sturak. I'm a babysitter.
What?
All right, you little maggots, now line up.
Are you serious?
I'll make your summer a living hell.
Ow! Hey!
TV rots your brain.
It's time we let her know the rules.
Yeah, we outnumber her.
Let's kick some butt.
Mrs. Sturak.
Mrs. Sturak?
Oh, my God. She died in her sleep.
They'll probably blame us.
Hey, be careful.
I got her.
No, I mean my skateboard.
Don't tell Mom the babysitter's dead.
Okay, so that was the soundbite that, you know, I was trying to get into this thing where we play soundbites before each of the movies you talk about to make it a little more interesting. So, Jason, do you want to share the quick synopsis of Don't Tell Mom?
Okay, so Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, 1991, so, you know, 4 years after Adventures in Babysitting. And this one stars Christina Applegate as the teenage eldest sister of
five
kids.
Who actually looks like a teenager.
Yes. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute. But she is actually, they kind of show her high school age, and she has three brothers and a sister. The mom is divorced, but has a new boyfriend, and the boyfriend is in Australia. But she decides at some point that she deserves some time for herself and is going on two months to Australia to be with her beau.
Well, you do that, right? You guys do that all the time. You leave your kids for like...
Yeah, we leave them for months at a time. Uh-huh. I mean, I do that with my kids all the time. So getting over that, she decides she's going to leave them home with this babysitter. And it's this, you know, elderly woman who says she's had lots of kids of her own and she seems so sweet, like a grandma type. And, you know, all her family's gone now and she has no one left. So she'd love to do this. And as soon as the mom leaves,
TV rots your brains.
Yeah. Turned to this evil hag with this referee whistle and just this demon woman who starts, you know, making the one girl who is kind of the tomboyish youngest, makes her wear a dress and, you know, starts laying down the law. And finally, there are all the kids come to Sue Ellen, who is Christina Applegate. His character, and says, you've got to do something. You've got to talk to her. So she says, all right, I'll talk to her. So she goes and knocks on the door, goes in, and the woman has promptly had a heart attack and died. So they take her, and not wanting to ruin their mother's vacation with her...
Whatever.
Yeah, fiance, boyfriend.
No, I don't think it's a fiance.
They decide to put her in a trunk and drop her off at the morgue with this sign on the front that says, nice lady... died of natural causes, I think is what it said. And then they try and live on their own for these 2 months. And the money that their mom left for them to live on with food and bills and everything happened to be in the pocket of the old lady, which they'd have already dropped off at the mortuary.
Can I just add this?
So
in,
Jason, they have to find a way to live. Yeah.
Can I just add this in real quick? Seriously? Yeah. So some old lady dies and you're not just going to like shake her down for even to see if she's got certs in her pocket? Really?
Well, I'll give you – you know what? I'll say this. The two or three of the kids at several points go digging through not only their mom's purse but Christina Applegate's purse for money.
Yeah.
Like completely ripping them off.
Uh-huh.
You know those kids would have been digging through this lady's pocket. Mm-hmm. So
look, I found half a eaten butterscotch. With some I could wash the lid off of it.
So – and I hadn't seen this movie in a long, long time. And I forgot the next part, which is actually the biggest part of the movie, which is where Christina Applegate decides – I got to get a job to make the money if we're going to survive without, you know, mom knowing what's going on. So she goes and applies at this fashion agency because that's what she loves to do. And she accidentally kind of stumbles upon this job where she had faked her resume because she's a high school kid, faked her resume. This executive hires her. And the executive is Rose is her name because she becomes Rose's new assistant. It's played by Joanna Cassidy. Yeah. And she becomes her new executive assistant, this high-paying, highfalutin job. And she tries to hide her identity throughout the entire thing, becomes very successful at it, and then it all kind of comes crumbling down at the end with this great, you know, ending where her high school world and her, you know, new over-the-summer executive job come
her secret of my
crashing
success
into
job.
Each other, yeah. So that's kind of the synopsis of it. I hadn't seen it in a long, long time. I didn't remember much about the movie other than the one thing that stood out was, again, Keith Coogan is this in this one as well. He plays the second oldest, the brother. He's actually the kind of the stoner, rockin' dude, long hair, gets high several times in this movie.
Yeah.
And she asks him to do the dishes, and him and his other stoner friends go up on the roof and throw the dishes out and shoot it with a shotgun. Dude, the dishes are done, man.
And I always remember I remember that from the trailer.
Yeah, like so I remember kid. That line from yeah. it, but I'd forgotten about the whole secret of my success, you know, younger kid who finds success because they're creative and different and tapped into the youth culture. And
very, very, very common thing that happens all the time.
It does. It actually does. And that was one of the few. Now, I will say overall, I liked this movie better than Adventures in Babysitting. I did like this movie. And I watched it with my teenage daughter, who really actually liked it. And the only thing to me that felt a little dated, there were two things. One, the wardrobe. Christina Applegate had on some funky 80s clothes. And for the time, great stuff. Definitely fit the time period. But man, wow, did we really wear stuff like that? Oh, wait, that was just me.
Yeah,
anyway,
you're sure.
And the second thing was the fact that she got a job at apparently a world famous, you know, uniform slash fashion company with no ID, no references, no nothing. And it was pretty much just sight unseen. Yes, I'll hire you and pay you all this money.
Jason, it's sort of like when you go to a hospital to pick up your quote unquote son who's broken his leg and they don't ask for any ID. They just let you take him out of there and you have to fill out no paperwork. They don't ask you for your insurance. They don't ask you for anything. You just take them and go.
It is. It's like old Doc Johnson. Yeah, yeah, of course. Yes, Miss Crandall, that's your son, right? Yeah, you were a high school kid in this what was he, 12?
No, he was younger. He was younger than 12.
Was he maybe 10?
Yeah, 9 or 10.
Nine or 10. So, yeah, she just picks him up like it's her own son, and they question her not at all, and it was just no big deal. So, yeah, there was a little suspension of disbelief.
A little.
But the jokes were pretty decent, and I thought that, you know, it felt more realistic with them at home than the, you know, Elizabeth Shue and the kids being out in the neighborhood. That felt a little bit more kind of set up and contrived. This one felt a little bit more natural and played a little bit better. Although some of the, you know, reality stuff wasn't quite there. But
well, I think this movie definitely had that, you know, sitcom vibe to it as well, like what we talked about before.
Yeah.
However, like you said, I felt like everything that happened, albeit, you know, ridiculous, still felt like it flowed out of everything that had come before. Like,
yeah.
It didn't feel as contrived as, like, Adventures Babysitting, where it's sort of like, you know, every time they turn a corner, somebody that was, you know, from an earlier scene. Again, if you go into Adventures Babysitting with the whole it's a fairy tale sort of attitude you know, detach from there, you'll be fine. And there is something to be said for the nostalgia of both of these movies. You know, for me, I'm going to be completely upfront and honest. I was kind of watching it slash doing other things so I could make sure I got it in. And I did find myself drawn to it several times. And would it be creepy to say because of Christina Applegate, considering she's only 20?
No,
but
that
I will
works
say,
just fine.
I will say this, though. She at least looked the part. Now, it's important also to remember at this time, she was Kelly Bundy on Married with Children, which was a huge, huge sitcom at the time. It started in 87. This is 91. So it had only been on for 4 years and ended up being on 11. So this is sort of the height of Married with Children. So she was a pretty big star just from that TV show.
And now, did you watch, were you a big fan of Married with Children when it was on?
Oh, dear God, yes.
Okay. We watched, my whole family and I was, we all watched it regularly as it came on. But, you know, the one thing that struck me about this is she played such a ditz, stupid blonde kind of.
Oh, yeah. Kelly was a moron. Yeah.
Yeah. That she actually acted very well in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. I mean, it was a,
I think,
you know,
it's
comedy,
more the other way around.
80s, you know, kind of kitschy funny, but she really did very good in it. And I think that maybe her character as, what was her name? Kelly Bundy, right? Yeah, Kelly Bundy.
Kelly,
That, I think that might have worked against her a little bit because, you know, it's kind of a typecast that she got for a long time after that. But I thought she did really good in this. I thought she was decent.
Well, to me, the acting, the better acting job was Married with Children, because from the perspective of, I think this character is probably a lot closer to how she is than, I mean, I think the Kelly Bundy thing was a total act. And, you know, I think that, at this time, I remember going, because my dad and I watched Married with Children, which, you know, didn't make my mom none too happy. My mom was, you know, very much a feminist, you know, and really, really, really hated Married with Children. I, however, loved it. And I always found it very amusing that my dad and I would watch it, excuse me, and he would be able to relate to Al. Like, he wasn't a shoe salesman, but I always found it funny how he would make comments about how, and of course, looking back on it, I was like, I get it. But
I loved it. Yeah. And it was a little risque for the time. You watch it now and it's not so bad. And it's, you know, compared to a lot of what's on, especially when you look at, you know, Ed O'Neill's recent stuff with Modern Family.
Yeah.
Married with Children was tame. But yeah, at the time it was a little bit more risque.
I don't know. If you watch some of those episodes, dude, they're still pretty. I mean, they're not Family Guy, you know, raunchy sometimes, but they're, I mean, and, you know, especially when you consider the time, but even not considering the time, they were pretty edgy and, you know, and I still think it holds up well. They still think it's funny.
Oh, they're hilarious.
Yeah.
They're
but that being said, I also want to address some of the famous faces that showed up in Don't Tell Mom. First and foremost was David Duchovny, also known as Mulder from X-Files.
I actually forgot he was in this movie.
I totally forgot
I saw him.
Dude, totally forgot.
Pop in as the, you know, kind of slimy douchey boyfriend of the slimy receptionist who doesn't like Sue Ellen. And,
yes. I know, that totally threw me. And what a complete waste of him. Because it was he was to say he was one note was like an understatement. He just literally, his whole purpose was to be pissy and angry at Sue Ellen. And
well, he had what, four lines, maybe five? You know, he wasn't in it much. He was really the boyfriend kind of,
I guess. But he's sort of the co-conspirator, like you said, with the receptionist to get her, because the receptionist is jealous and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, there was that. And who's the other person I was gonna mention?
Well, John Getz was in it. He also he was the boyfriend of Rose, who was the vice president that Sue Ellen worked for. And that was another little creepy incident where on to Sue Ellen. And even then she looked really young for
him.
Yeah,
she looked young.
Like he was in his 40s at least.
Yeah. Well, her character's supposed to be like 17. So,
But I mean, even her faux character, like she was supposed to be this executive assistant.
Yeah.
Still was in her 20s probably.
No, they said she was about 27, 28. That's what she was.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was in his 40s at least.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And just, it was creepy. So,
what you're basically saying, my earlier.
Because he's been a lot of stuff too. So.
So what you're saying is my earlier line about Christina Applegate being what caught my attention. What does that say about me?
Oh, no. At the time, I mean, you were, when the movie came out.
Yeah. Okay. I was actually
referring
to.
We were right into her age range.
I was referring to when I was just watching it though.
I won't tell anybody, pervert.
Oh, wait, no. But she was 20. So, no, but it is funny because she at least looked 17 as opposed to the other.
Yes, Elizabeth Shue didn't really look 17. Yes, Christine Applegate, I thought, was a better look the eight character age more.
Absolutely, And, you know, it was, that's what I know who the other person was I wanted to mention. Danielle Harris, who played the little sister, and her part was, you know, as far as all the other characters went, she was not nearly as featured as Keith Coogan. But for all you horror movie fans out there, she played little Jamie Lloyd, niece of psychopathic, supernaturally driven super serial killer Michael Myers in Halloween 4 and The Return of Michael Myers and Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. And interestingly enough, my opinion, I totally admit that, but to me, Halloween 4, other than the original, best of the series, hands down.
I have to agree.
And, you know, and actually at some point I want to talk about that one just enough. So, because it's very rare that you come up to the fourth in a series and come up with something that, you know, is even close to being decent. So it was, although I don't know, some people made some valid arguments about, like, you know, Dream Warriors and Dream Master of the Nightmare on Elm Street film. So,
And she was also in The Last Boy Scout.
Yes,
she was. Bruce Willis's.
Yes, she was.
Daughter in that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So just throw that. And actually, she's cool. She's definitely, she was definitely a bigger name in that movie than.
Oh, and most recently, it's also important to point out, she was in the remakes of Halloween and Halloween 2.
Yeah.
She played Annie Brackett. Yeah. So very cool. And I don't know, you have anything else you want to say about Don't Tell Mom? I feel like we're doing this pattern where we talk a crap ton about one movie and then the last one we're like, yeah, I guess we'll talk.
Yeah. No, I will say I really I like this movie better than Adventures of Babysitting. I thought it held up better. I thought it was more timeless other than her wardrobe. I thought it was cute. It was kind of funny. So, and I got to say, my teenage daughter does not like any movies I watch. And the fact that she sat and laughed at this and actually talked about it the day after, this got a gold star in my book. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Well, and it's also, I think that probably helped the viewing process with it. I think it, you know, like maybe my kids been a little bit older and watching it together, I think it would have been more, you know, but watching it, you know, basically as a grown man, I'm sort of like,
yeah, definitely. So,
anyway, okay.
But no, that's all I have to say. So they were both, you know, both good movies. Definitely the nostalgia was better than the reality, but still, you know, decent movies today. So if you haven't seen them, definitely go check them out. And re-listen to the podcast and tell us, you know, whether you think we were complete idiots or we were right on the ball.
Well, I'm sure they think we're complete idiots, but they can also tell us if they think we're wrong.
I know what they're going to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then on that note, do you want to go into the 6 movies, the must-see movies?
Yes. Okay. Because if they haven't thought we were idiots before, they're definitely going to think we're idiots now.
Okay. So. All right. So now we are now going to cover Forgotten Flicks, 6 must-see movies that prove babysitting is the world's most dangerous job.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I'm actually debating whether to put some kind of little soundbite or something in there. I have no idea. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I'm probably not even going to edit this part out. We'll just leave it in. So, Jason, we'll start with you. What is your sixth pick? Just so you know, we're pushing it an hour. And just for anybody who's listening, we had a couple technical difficulties, also known as Skype pooped on us. And actually twice. So this, we're pushing an hour. So we'll go ahead and
we'll be all right with these. I don't want to give away too much with these. Yeah. So I'll, my number 6 pick, you know, kind of sticking with the Christina Applegate connection and, Married with Children is Dutch from 1991. It stars Ed O'Neill, who obviously was the dad in Married with Children, also in Modern Family. Very, very funny show. But this is one of those movies. I didn't see it in the theaters. I saw it when it came out on cable, probably HBO or one of the movie channels. But I loved it. A hilarious movie. Very, very funny. Ed O'Neill's great in this. It was underrated. I didn't see a lot about it when it was out. But I thought it's a hilarious movie. And it basically is the story of newly married guy who marries a woman who's got a son who's, you know, probably in that 11, 12-year-old range. And he goes to pick him up from school, like military school or boarding school. And it's their road trip coming home. And, you know, the mom wants him to bond with the kid who is actually Ethan Embry, who plays the kid's name's Doyle. And they're kind of adventures getting home. And it's very much, you know, it's kind of got the vibe of like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where they're just trying to get home and all this funky stuff happens. But Ed O'Neill's hilarious. And it has that similar vibe to Adventures in Babysitting.
Didn't John Hughes write that?
Although it seems to flow a lot better in this. I think this movie is just hilarious.
Hey, Jason. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I said, didn't John Hughes write that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that was another funny thing is that this is a John Hughes movie. So along those lines, it was that same kind of, you know, Home Alone.
Yeah.
Very funny. There's some slapsticky moments in it, but it's really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was a good pick. And for my pick, I'm going to go with something that's actually way beyond our 80s, 90s, and you know, we sometimes get into the whole 70s thing, threshold for Forgotten Flicks. And quite honestly, that's fine, because no one says that we can't go way, way.
Hey, we
way
write the rules,
that.
We can break the rules.
That's right, that's right. So I'm going to go with The Innocents from 1961. It is classic, creepy ghost story. It is based on the Henry James novel, Turn of the Screw. Excuse me. It stars Deborah Kerr. I don't know if anyone remembers her from, you know, Fair to Remember. She played in The King and I. She played Anna. She was actually in From Here to Eternity. So, you know, just a beautiful, you know, classic actress. Michael Redgrave, who, you know, was actually, when I looked him up on IMDb, I obviously knew of the actor, but I didn't realize, if you know, IMDb is to be believed, that his first film was The Lady Vanishes, which is a Alfred Hitchcock film from 1938. And he was also, probably for those trivia buffs out there, he was the father of Lynn Redgrave and Vanessa Redgrave, the actresses, and the grandfather of Natasha Richardson and Julie Richardson, so the actresses, which is pretty cool. And Martin Stevens and Pamela Franklin are the actor and actress that play Miles and Flora, which are the two little kids that the Deborah Kerr character is supposed to be watching. So if you've ever read Turn of the Screw, or if you, you know, haven't seen The Innocents, I highly recommend it. It's, you know, Deborah Kerr's character is the, you know, woman that's hired to take care of these two young kids. Kids are a little creepy, to say the least. She starts thinking that she sees the ghost of the former caretaker of the children, and I believe it's the gardener, and who had, you know, it's implied they had this illicit relationship. It's in the book, it even goes deeper, and it's implied that something happened with the kids, which is extra uber creepy. And the story itself is just really well told. It's black and white. It's just creepy, and it builds, and you begin to question, okay, is her character just, you know, she out of her mind? Is she really seeing ghosts? You just don't know. So I highly recommend it. The Innocents from 1961. So that was the fifth pick. So Jason, let's give us number four.
Number four. Another story of oldest sister left in charge, goes horribly awry. And I kind of took a more of a horror twist with this one, with The Gate from 1987.
Love it.
I remember this was one of the first, well, not first, but this was one of the memorable PG-13 movies for me. And it was the story basically of an older sister who convinces her parents she can be left at home to watch her younger brother. As soon as the parents leave, she throws a party and has all these teenagers come over. Well, as it happens, the brother had been in trouble for digging a hole in the backyard. Unbeknownst to them, a hole to hell. And a few things have to happen for that hole to hell to be actually opened. Which,
and of course,
ironically enough, the teenagers take care of, several of which are they decide to levitate the young boy, who's actually played by Stephen Dorff. He's been in a lot of stuff, even up till now. But he's the young boy, and they levitate him. That's one of the things they have to do. The dog gets killed. And so to dispose of the dog, they throw it in the hole, thinking that they'll just bury it. But they basically just sacrifice the dog to the hole of hell. And then they break open a geode they find in there, which also releases the demon. So as soon as that happens, all these horrible things start happening. And it was kind of one of those that was – it was – the horror in it was scary. To me as a kid when I watched it, it was scary enough without being gory and completely like scare your pants off. Like the scene where they – are on the phone and they go to call the police, and this red phone just basically starts melting to the wall. And the little like imps that come running out of
the
hole of hell. And it was scary.
It's funny. I another one that I haven't seen in a long time, would love to watch again just to see if it even comes close to holding up for me. I know that the one kid, it's his best buddy, and I don't remember the kid's name, and it's been a really long time since I've seen the film. So, but is, you know, into heavy metal, and of course, you know, it's the devil's music.
So
I remember the kid doing the whole, like, they play the record backwards.
Yes, that's exactly it.
And I don't remember, did that have something to do with triggering the demon showing up?
It did. It was like the incantation was on this heavy metal record that when they played it backwards, it actually read the incantation that called the demons from hell. And it was...
I think what I'm going to have to really do in order to enjoy all these movies from my youth is just accept right now that their entire story structure is, it's essential. It's an essential element of these films to just be chock full of massive contrivances. I think as long as I accept that, I'll be okay.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, as long as I can be accepting of that, I'll be okay. So anyway, that's a very good pick, I do think. So I will now go ahead and do, I believe we're up to number three. Mm-hmm. And my pick for number three will be a sequel. It's actually the sequel is a TV movie, even though the original was not. I didn't want to go the original because I just want to be different. And Jill Sholin is in the sequel. And, you know, everybody knows I got to promote me some Jill Sholin movies because she was in The Stepfather. And the original Stepfather is awesome. So she was in When a Stranger Calls Back from 1993, which is the sequel to When a Stranger Calls from 1979, I believe, that starred Carol Kane. And Carol Kane is also in this one, as is Charles Durning, who is a very, you know, well-known actor. He's been in tons and tons of stuff. And I'm not going to go into too much because Jill Sholin really is only, she's in the movie, but the key element of the remake, as I remember it, is the opening like 10 minutes or so. It's very reminiscent of Scream when Drew Barrymore at the beginning of that film, where it's just this intense sort of back and forth between her and the killer. And actually makes me wonder if Kevin Williamson wasn't somewhat influenced by the opening of this film, because they are very similar. She's not on the phone with him. He's actually on the other side of the door, the front door. And the original, they took the whole urban legend of, you know, the calls are coming, she's getting the calls, she's babysitting, she's getting the calls. Turns out, you know, he's done something to the kids, the killer's in the house, that whole kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of like it's a pretty typical early 90s made for TV, you know, thriller type movie. But, you know, it has Jill Sholin in it. It is a sequel to what's considered by a lot of people to be kind of a classic horror film, although I've heard a lot of arguments that it's actually pretty, you know, boring by most horror movie standards. So it's worth checking out. The guy who directed this one, though, Fred Walton, is also the guy who directed the original. And he also did a movie. The original was a William Castle film, not When a Stranger Calls, but the original, he did a film called, geez, I'm brain farting all over the place tonight. There was a William Castle film called I Know What You Did. I Saw What You Did and I Know Who You Are.
That's it. Yeah.
Yes. And, or maybe it was just called I Saw What You Did. And, but that was it was basically about these two girls that, you know, you're doing prank calls and they say people, I saw what you did. I know who you are. Well, unfortunately they call a killer and he's just killed somebody. So he has to track them down because he thinks they're telling the truth. Well, the original was a William Castle film. Fred Walton, the guy who directed When a Stranger Calls and When a Stranger Calls Back, actually did a TV version remake of that film that starred, and help me with this one, Jason, because we were just talking about My Two Dads in the last episode, but the girl who played the daughter in My Two Dads was in it.
Oh,
yeah, I'm pretty sure she was in it.
I forget her name now. Yeah, okay. I looked it up, and because for some reason I was making the connection that
was
Alyssa Milano, but it's not
Alyssa
Milano.
I remember that. No, it was Alyssa Milano.
No. I forget her name. I forget what she was. But
yeah, I want to say Stacy, but I don't think that's right.
No, I don't remember.
Anyway, it doesn't really matter. The point is, I remember it. I do remember, though, that the killer in that one was Robert Carradine, also known as Lewis from Revenge of the Nerds, which I always found to be interesting. Yeah. So
Stacy Keenan.
I was halfway there.
You're close. You were there.
Yeah. I was going to say Stacy Keach, which would have been really awkward because
that would have been weird
because he played Mike Hammer and was Titus's dad on the TV show Titus, which is an awesome sitcom if you've never seen it. So anyway, so that's my pick. When a Stranger Calls, I know I probably didn't sell it as being, you know, any great shakes, but the fact is it's got Jill Sholin in it. It's got a cool opening sequence. And that's about all I got for that one. So Jason, would you like to continue with number two?
Yeah, my last one is one of my favorite movies as a kid. I actually see this movie a bunch. This is another one of those back in the day when HBO used to play the same movies over and over and over and over and over again. Was Jim Henson's Labyrinth from 1986, starring David Bowie as the Goblin King, and also has Jennifer Connelly, who's supposed to play a young teenage girl who is looking after her baby brother, doesn't want to, wishes him away, and then has to actually find her way through the labyrinth of all these different characters and different bad guys and traps and things to make her way back to the center of the labyrinth to save her brother. Fantastic movie. It actually stars Brian Henson, who is Jim Henson's son, as one of the voices, like her main Yeah, I think it's partner character Hoggle in this.
Hoggle, that's it. Hoggle, yeah.
Yeah, it was Hoggle. Yeah. And plays the voice of Hoggle. And this was actually written or co-written by Jim Henson, but
he directed
fantastic
it too,
story,
right?
Good music.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, what were you saying?
I said he directed, did Jim Henson direct it? He directed it.
Yeah, right? Directed, yes. Yeah, it was written and I'm sorry, it was co-written and directed by Jim Henson. Yeah. But David Bowie has some good music in this. The soundtrack to this is fantastic, and he's got some really cool scenes. He does this scene where he kind of juggles these glass orbs back and forth through his fingers, and the puppetry and some of these characters are phenomenal. Yeah. But again, she's babysitting, and things go wildly awry, and you know, she ends up, spoiler alert, getting the baby back. Nothing happens, but lesson learned, and it's really just a phenomenal movie. I thought it was just great. I could watch it again and again, and I think the last time I saw it was probably about 2 years ago. Still good because it's very fanciful. And the only thing is that Jennifer Connelly in this is supposed to be 15 and doesn't quite pull off 15. I think she looks more of a same kind of thing. I mean, you run into that.
She looked more 15 than Elizabeth Shue looked 17.
Most definitely. Yeah. Most definitely. But she was cute in this, and it was a very, very cool movie. Cool. I liked a lot. If you haven't seen this movie, you've got to see it. Along with another one of Jim Henson's best, which is Dark Crystal, which that's a whole different episode of Forgotten Flicks. But yeah, this was phenomenal. So if you haven't seen it, so my number one, the number two overall pick is Labyrinth. From 1986 with Jennifer Connelly and David Bowie.
Cool, cool. Good choice. So the number one, not for any particular reason other than it just fell to me and I just randomly chose to make it number one. This actually, I think, really falls under the moniker of Forgotten Flick. And it's a movie I had pretty much forgotten about. I don't even know if I can find it anymore. I remember I recorded it off of like HBO or Cinemax or something back in the day when I had my, you know, what the heck was that? Did you just get eaten?
No, no. Sorry. I bumped the microphone.
Oh, okay. It's like, oh, come back, Jason. So, So the movie is Twisted from 1986 starring Christian Slater as, as a, how can I put this? He's a sort of reclusive kid who also has a penchant for, let's say, Nazi memorabilia and psychological torture. And the main character besides him is played by actress Lois Smith. And she's one of those actors that, honestly, I as soon as I saw her, I knew her face. But I was like, where have I seen her? I think she may have been in Twister.
She was the aunt.
Yes, I was about to say, was she the aunt?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because
she was the aunt where they all went and had steak and eggs.
Yeah, and then she ends up getting caught up in the twister, and
I think she was the sculptor, like the metal worker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's her.
Yeah, and also starred Dinah Merrill, and it was honestly, I have minimal recollection of the movie other than Christian Slater. It kind of starts off with you know, the most recent, you know, nanny or whatever she's supposed to be has been murdered. Or, well, sorry. Quote, wait, hold on. She had a quote unquote accident.
Yes.
and I believe the IMDb entry was obviously she had an accident. She was dead with her neck broken at the bottom of some steps. I mean, obviously, why would you want to investigate that? So anyway, they hire Lois Smith's character to play become the new nanny for Christian Slater's character, which Mark, that was the character's name, and his sister. Well, once she's there, he, you know, gets weirder and weirder and won't come out of his room. While he's in there, he's like listening to Wagner with this, you know, Defuhrer speeches over top of it or something. And it's really creepy. It actually reminded me, it's funny, like looking back on it, that's not funny, but it reminded me of Apt Pupil.
That's what I was going to say. It reminds me of the Stephen King story.
Yeah, which was eventually made into a movie starring Brad Renfro, and I'm totally getting this off the top of my head, and Ian McKellen. And that movie was, of course, that Brad Renfro's character befriends this old man in the neighborhood. Turns out that old man is an actual Nazi war criminal in hiding.
But the kid's enamored with him and wants to be like him.
It gets pretty dark pretty quick. Interestingly, was directed by Bryan Singer, who directed Superman Returns. And I'm not even going to make any jokes about Nazi atrocities and Superman Returns and the correlation. I'm not even going to go there.
Don't pull out the Hitler reference.
I'm not.
Don't do it.
Yeah, because you immediately lose the argument. Everybody knows that.
Exactly.
So Anyway, so Mark's character, that's a Christian Slater guy, he just does, using like electronics and just general, you know, mean-spiritedness, sort of, you know, is trying to drive Helen crazy. Well, all sorts of manner of bad things happen, and it doesn't really end well for anyone. Let's just put it that way. So one thing I did note on it was that Adam Hollander, who directed it, this is his only directing credit. However, it's been a cinematographer in like 32 movies. So that's Twisted from 1986. I can't even tell you whether it holds up or not because I can't find it. It's not on Netflix. I do not have the VHS tape anymore. It's been gone for a long time. So I think that's one of those I would love to, like, you know, sometime when I'm going through Goodwill and, you know, they get their big VHS bin.
Yeah.
Try to see if I can locate it, because it's just one of those like little oddball obscurities that, you know, nobody remembers. And the fact that it starred Christian Slater probably is the thing that makes it, you know, kind of interesting to check out.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, that's the six picks.
Good pick.
And I guess on that note, we will go ahead and go into our real quick housekeeping about how you can reach us and check our stuff out. So if you want to go on over to ForgottenFlicks.com, that would be the blog and the site where we do all sorts of stuff. We're going to be doing some things differently here in the not too distant future. We're running out of my six must-see movies, you know, from, you know, I've gone through the 80s. My next... actually, probably by the time this episode is airing, this episode's airing on Wednesday, so it will still be the case.
And it will be gone.
Whenever you're listening to this episode, it's going to depend on how far along we are into it, but I'm stopping after 1990, so I'm kind of going to be retooling a few things in regards to that. But, you know, come on by the site. We got plenty of stuff to check out and read and comment on posts and whatnot. I try to do a decent job of responding to comments as much as possible. You can also follow Jason and myself on Twitter. Jason is at twitter.com/FlicksSidekick, and that's Flicks with an X. And I'm twitter.com/ForgottenFlicks, and that's Flicks with an X. And you can also go to iTunes and subscribe to our show there. We'd greatly appreciate it. Leave us some feedback. We know that feedback helps the show move up the ranks a little bit. So we've already gotten a couple of really awesome reviews, one from Umar himself, which we really appreciate. It was very cool.
It was awesome. Very good. Thank you.
Very cool. And, you know, so we really appreciate that.
Absolutely. We love getting phone calls. Definitely give us a call at area code 206-203-0491. That's 206-203-0491. And as always, that is a long distance call if long distance charges apply. So not a free call, but give us a call anyway. We love hearing the feedback.
Yep. Very cool. And we just want to give you a real quick tease as to what our next episode is going to be.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, all you teenage comet zombies, listen up. This is Kelly Maroney.
So I imagine you can guess from that teaser that it might have something to do with the actress Kelly Maroney. And if you follow us on Twitter, you know that we got an interview with her. So it's awesome. We were thrilled. It was fantastic.
It's going to be great. Yeah.
It's going to be a good one. So hopefully you'll check it out. And that episode will more than likely be in about 2 weeks' time. So we will get that out there and we'll let everybody know when it's available. So, you know, make sure you check it out. And I guess, you know, that's pretty much everything. And Jason, any final thoughts about Adventures of Babysitting or Don't Tell Mom, the babysitter?
I am never babysitting my kids again. Oh. After watching these movies, it's an awful job. Forget it.
You think the missus will be down with it, huh? Yeah, I'm thinking not.
So, not at all.
Well, I guess on that note, until next time, remember, a flick is only forgotten if you're not talking about it.